So welcome, everybody. Welcome to the House of the Rising Sun with Lynn and Bruce. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Lynn.
Are you in sunny California still?
I am. And it's been mostly sunny. We've had a little overcast now and then, but yeah. So, yep. Enjoying
We're still getting snow in Colorado someplace.
That's what I hear, yeah.
Like
see it on my weather maps. Our window into the dreamscape of the abode we call planet Earth that we've all become so invested in, huh?
It is so funny. And, you know, I love weather. I grew up in Leadville. I don't know. Did you ever go up there?
I have been there. Yes. A neat little town.
Yeah. A neat little town. Little town right in the very, like, top of the mountains.
Yeah. It's, isn't it the highest elevation in Colorado of cities, I think?
It's the highest in the country.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, I was high growing up, and now Colorado is the home of high.
So I can say I literally and figuratively grew up in a nuclear nuclear family, and you can say that you were the highest you could get in the country, you know, growing up, right?
Yeah. Growing up, that's right. That's right. How funny that is. But it's still snow up there. There's snow up there, like when pretty much year round, you're going to find little patches of snow here and there.
Yeah, it's what 11,000 something, 12,000.
It's almost 2 miles.
Yeah,
it's just short of being the steeple of the church. The top of the steeple of the church actually makes 2 miles.
Okay.
So that's.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's high. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, we could get high in another way by getting above the battleground and going beyond all duality. How's that sound?
At least
that could be our intention. And that was, I was perusing what I've been going through, as I probably some people might know, that I skipped around for several years on the FAQs, and I finally decided to read them consecutively, read and or listen to them, because I listen to some of them on my phone in the mornings, and I just, you know, put it on speak the selection and select the whole thing and just listen for about 10-15 minutes to a block of three or four of them at a time. And they're all so good, the FACIM FAQs, and I was thinking, unless you had some other idea, Lynn, maybe we could go over FAQ number. Let me find the number here. It is 1135 in the FAQs. Does that sound like a good one?
1135? Yeah, because today's lesson 135. So.
Oh, okay. Numerically, it lines up, doesn't it? Yeah.
It lines up numerically. I think you kind of maybe do this too. I'm always looking for patterns and numbers, especially.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I always find them. It's like and numbers, as you well know, of course we made them up to match this. It didn't just occur naturally. So, but I find it fascinating how it does all work out.
Of course, there's only two natures, right? I mean, there's only the ego nature and the real nature, and only one of those is true. But
exactly.
Yeah.
So I got 1135.
Okay.
Let me see if I can make this the whole screen instead of just a little thing over here on the side. Not sure how to do that.
Okay.
But doesn't matter because here we are.
Yeah. Okay.
So, do you want to start reading?
Sure. This is from facimoutreach.org, if you want to follow along. And if you go to the questions and answers, there's a numerical list. And this one is questions 238.htm. So actually, the full URL is facimoutreach.org/QA/questions/questions238.htm, and then it's the first one in that list, which is number 1135. And it starts out with, I was hoping that you could help me by commenting on this inner dilemma that I'm having as I'm training with the Holy Spirit to become a teacher of God. I'm laughing only because I've been reading a lot in the Manual for Teachers about that lately, as I've been rereading it, reading a second time, and Ken has been talking extensively about how we all are teachers all the time, and how we teach what we learn and we learn what we teach all the time, because as we've just mentioned, there's only two thought systems, and we're either teaching the thought system of inclusion and kindness and the sameness that basically restores our mind to the oneness that we never left, or we're teaching its seeming opposite that doesn't really exist, but we've made an incredibly elaborate hoax in our mind only, in a dream only, that we use a little shorthand word called ego to refer to. But that's what we're undoing by seeing the vaporware in our mind that it really is. and gently laughing at it, you know, not in any kind of derisive way, but just in a real gentle, easy at our own pace way to look at what never happened and just say, oh, that was silly. Yeah. And I think that's why so many spiritual teachings, you know, say that, you know, like the Course, you know, when you'll realize in glad astonishment that, you know, what you made such a big deal out of wasn't real. But we don't get to that point until we make a consistent practice of looking with our inner kindness teacher. And that's why this FAQ refers to the little willingness section in chapter 18, which, you know, is basically saying that, you know, you can't really figure this out on your own. You really need to go beyond your good intentions, which aren't necessarily good enough if you're coming from the little self, of course. But trust your willingness, because that willingness has the seed of the total willingness to trust, and to trust beyond the little self, and that takes us all the way home. So anyway, I'll finish reading the question.
As you were reading that, I was kind of reading this question and recognizing in it how the trap that, you know, because this is like sheer ego looking at, you know, I'm responsible to try to help people, and therefore, you know, I've got to be the best I can be or whatever to help people, and I'm inadequate right now to help people. And so go ahead and read this, because I suffered this for years.
Yeah, I think we all do. I think anyone that thinks of themselves as separate, which, you know, everyone in the room raise your hand, because that's our assessment of ourselves most of the time, you know, unless we're mindfully looking at it with our inner kindness teacher, you know, it's going to make that mistake. I mean, it's just, how could we not? And then we get into the whole realm of comparison and differences and thinking that we have something to do or to share or to be that's different than someone else, or, you know, and it's this whole, you know, downward spiral, slippery slope thing of investing in ego's differences, and then that just gets us further mired in a belief system that just doesn't work. Okay, so I'll start the question over again.
I have comments on that, so go on.
Okay, I was hoping that you could help me by commenting on this inner dilemma that I'm having as I'm training with the Holy Spirit to become a teacher of God. Jesus himself says in his psychotherapy pamphlet that there is nothing holier or more noble in this world than helping a brother who asks for help. This is inspiring to me, and I feel good that I'm learning to be a messenger for the Holy Spirit. But the dilemma that I'm having is that others do not always see me the way that I see me. I know. Well, it's because it's, you know, it taps into the whole martyr-victim story quite easily, doesn't it? I mean, but, you know, because, you know, think about all the persecution that it's so easy for egos to get into, and we've all done it, and we all continue to do it whenever we feel the slightest irritation about anything or everything that annoys us or outrages us or anything.
I see Jesus on the cross looking around going, those ingrates.
Oh, I thought you were going to say always look on the bright side of life.
No, I could say that too. But Jesus, I'm just going, they didn't listen to me, those ingrates.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. What was I thinking? You know, why did they go down this bitter road? You know, but that, obviously, you know, that he corrects that in this beautiful blue book that, you know, it's not about the book. It's about the content, of course, that says that, you know, I didn't die, you know, that you were never born and as bodies and therefore you will never die as the same. And that's what I taught. And if you teach anything else, then you're not teaching the perfect innocence, you know, and that's why, you know, yesterday's workbook lesson, I think, is such a great one too, is, you know, if we can look at anyone that we have grievance with and realize that I'm not seeing forgiveness as it is if I teach anything but perfect innocence. And if I accuse anyone else of something, then I'm accusing it of myself. And that's, wow, that's such a potent concept, isn't it? And it's all through here. So we'll get to it here. So, okay. Meanwhile, back again. I think I finished two sentences in the question now. Let's go on. This is inspiring to me, and I feel good that I'm learning to be a messenger of the Holy Spirit. But the dilemma I'm having is that, I guess I did read more than two sentences. But the dilemma that I'm having is that others do not always see me the way that I see me. For example, a friend asks for help, and I see it as an opportunity to teach and learn and think highly of myself and we'll have to restrain our laughter. We'll do an inner Colbert here to keep from cracking ourselves up, right? And do not believe that the self-exaltation is coming from grandeur and not grandiosity. But sometimes the other person does not see it this way and instead sees my, quote, kindness as a weakness, unquote. Like that I have nothing better to do than help them with their problem, for example. I guess that I feel undervalued and confused because I may not have the worthy credentials that other teachers of God have, but I know that I have a lot to offer. But others only judge me on my worldly credentials and status. Why would the Holy Spirit guide me to a situation to have me be his messenger only to find out that the other person sees me as needing their approval or something? Do you think that this is a pattern that I am getting some unconscious payoff or purpose from? Well, I think that question, you know, having studied the Course for a while, sort of answers itself. But that's why I think Lynn and I are kind of laughing. Not in a derisive way, but in a self-recognizing way, because we can see, you know, having looked at the ego for a while, you begin to see these patterns. And the only sane response is a very kindly, non-derisive inner laugh that says, we got it all upside down and backwards, don't we? I mean, anytime we think there's an other that needs repair or fixing or our altruism, we've gone off one of ego's rickety ladders that, you know, is ignoring the platinum immutable, indestructible, brilliantly lit, but not at the base, where we start climbing ladder in the center that the Holy Spirit gives us. In fact, we discover later on it's an escalator, but we believe we needed to climb, so we start out with thinking that we're having to expend effort to climb up it, right? But anyway, I'm mixing metaphors again. Do you want to start reading the answer, Lynn? Or did you have other comments on the question?
No, I... You know, the only comment I have on the question actually is, you know, I'm laughing, obviously, you know, because not because I'm looking at this person and thinking, what an idiot, because that would be real easy to do also, except mm-hmm. for the fact that I do this, I've done this myself.
Oh, yeah, we all do.
And I'm still doing it and not even recognizing it when it happens. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole idea of being mindful about this stuff. You really do, you know, you start seeing your own little foibles. And unfortunately, you probably see them in another before you see them in yourself. Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at other teachers and pointing out their flaws in your own mind or maybe to other people, you're doing really the same thing. So, yeah. You know, and I can't imagine Although, yeah, I guess I can imagine because I know. I know Ken, and I know I kind of know Rosemary and those guys out there. But that when they got this letter, and whoever got assigned to read and answer it, were they laughing their ass off too, and going, "Yep, this is a perfect."
All in the same boat. All been there. All still are there. Whenever we lapse from. Yep. Trusting Holy Spirit, exactly.
Exactly. And so, yeah, so in this question I see a lot of mixing of thoughts. And, the first, and I'm not going to go into great detail on the question, but I'm going to mention a couple of things. The first thing is I'm trying to do this with the Holy Spirit. And why does the Holy Spirit put me there? Why does the Holy Spirit put me this, if these people are not going to listen? And this goes right to the heart, in fact, to me, of our confusion about the Holy Spirit and what the Holy Spirit actually does in this world and what the Holy Spirit actually does in my mind. And this person is really thinking that the Holy Spirit is saying, go over there and talk to that person. I'm going to give you words to say. They're imagining that this is happening, and so they're going into it with a completely, even that they said that, I feel like I'm, the self exaltation is coming from grandeur and mm-hmm. not grandiosity. Obviously they know the course, they know the words of the course, but they're, not getting that, the Holy Spirit, the work works very naturally through you, doesn't put you in a position where you're going to go out and make a fool out of yourself or get yourself rejected. And it's a much more subtle kind of thing, because I've known so many people that said, well, the Holy Spirit is telling me that, you're an idiot, or the Holy Spirit is telling me that, this is all wrong. Or here's how the Holy Spirit, and you can get a whole group of people, and especially Course in Miracles students, in a room together, and they can have a huge argument about what the Holy Spirit is telling them to do because it's different than what the other person is doing. And the fundamental problem is you're not listening to the Holy Spirit, even though you think you are, because the Holy Spirit would never do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, what you're describing, the phrase that comes to mind that I think typifies when we first usually encounter something that we think we discover that at least partially works is missionary zeal. We get this kind of like, oh, now I've got to fix the world, forgetting that one of the primary ideas and objectives in the course is that ideas leave not their source. In other words, the truth or falsity of whichever thought system we've chosen doesn't leave the mind. And combine that with another very challenging but pivotal idea that was in one of the workbook lessons a day or two ago is, there is no world. This is the central thought the course attempts to teach. Put those together and you get a 1-2 punch that is a kind one, not a destructive one that the Holy Spirit delivers that is just wonderful, that gives us the insight that we need to say, okay, there's no, to paraphrase John Wheeler, the physicist who said there's no out there, there's no projection out there, but the projection, the whole idea of projection is that we made up all the seeming others in our personalized, customized, exquisitely, mathematically perfectly crafted classroom of space-time to present to us exactly what we need at every moment to be our forgiveness classroom so that we can look at the contents of our mind. And that's the royal road that Freud talked about that Ken shares in a number of his audios and videos, and written work, of course, that is really, this is how we get back. And thank goodness for that. Because we have this classroom to look at our own, the contents of our own mind, and see that that's where the opportunity is for choosing another teacher. That's where we get to look at the things that we're not at peace with, that we're not comfortable with, and where we, you know, see the evidence of our unconscious guilt, even though we might often tell ourselves through the course of a day, well, what guilt? I don't see any guilt. But if we feel irritation about anything, or annoyance, or anger, or boredom, or frustration, or, you know, pick any emotion of discomfort or dis-ease, including things having to do with the body, which we normally think of dis-ease as a physical thing, but it's all on the mind, then we're realizing it's all a decision, isn't it? It's all just a choice for a thought system that has no basis in truth except the life that we've breathed into it. And so we can choose against that in any moment, but we need that classroom of the alleged others in order to get back to our mind. And that's where the potency of this whole tremendous psycho-spiritual system comes into play, and we have that opportunity to see what's in the mind. And that's what's liberating and really cool, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And then you don't have this missionary zeal because you recognize that the only mission you have is to allow your own mind to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's my own mind. You know, if through a healed mind, I'm not going to see other people as needing help.
Right.
You know, healed mind, I'm not going to see anybody else as being weak or small or grandiose. I'm going to be, through a healed mind, I'm going to be seeing everyone as being whole and healed.
Exactly.
And therefore, there's nothing to fix. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is what Jesus knew, that there was really nothing to fix. And that's why, you know, people were healed in his presence, not because there was he was doing anything, but because of the way he saw them.
Yes.
This is all about changing my mind so that I can see the Christ in my brother and connect to the Christ in my brother, not so that I can see the sickness in my brother and try to make him well.
Mm-hmm.
It will never work.
Yeah. And it ties in perfectly to that workbook lesson from yesterday again. You know, would I accuse myself of this? When we see anything that we find objectionable or that we don't like, the thought system that is doing the not liking is the one to question and say, wait a minute, there must be a better way here. And right. And what you just said, Lynn, ties in beautifully with my favorite lesson, you know, active, you know, exercise from Gary Renard's Fearless Love audio, which is, if I can see all of spirit, if I can remember to see that all of spirit is in everyone that I meet, not just part of spirit, but everyone is completely healed and whole and innocent in truth, not necessarily the way I'm seeing an individual or a situation at the moment, but in truth, everything beyond the veil of my space-time dream is perfect, and everyone is included in that, and I can't leave anyone out for that to work, then from that perspective, there's nothing to heal. And that's where the real forgiveness kicks in, and that's the whole foundation of true forgiveness, because if there's nothing to heal, then there's not a judgment, and then a judgment is taken away. It's basically saying we have no basis for judgment in the world. And so anything that's based on a dream is a faulty basis for judgment. And that's what's liberating, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's liberating for me, and it's liberating for everyone around me, because then they're not going to be being hassled by me and my crap while I'm trying to be Miss Goody Two-Shoes. And seriously, believe me, I'm talking from my own experience that this whole attempt to try to fix what is really not broken just causes nothing but trouble. And I've seen this on Facebook a couple of times over the last few weeks, and I think it's kind of a good analogy of a young couple move into a new house, and you know, she's sitting looking out the window, and she sees the neighbor, this must have been in the olden days, hanging up their clothes on the laundry line, and she's looking out there, and she says to her husband, you know, this woman could use some help with her laundry, because her laundry is really dingy. And so, you know, every week when she looks out the window, she mentions this about the laundry. And then one week she looks out the window and she says, oh, she must have finally figured out how to wash the clothes, because now her clothes are really clean. And the husband says, well, actually, I washed the window.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Great metaphor.
Yeah, great metaphor. And so, you know, this is just about washing my own window. And when my own window's clean, I can see that your laundry is clean. I can see that you're not a sinner. I can see that you're not broken. And therefore, I'm not going to be running in trying to to fix your broken situation. I'm going to be seeing you as the Christ, and that is what brings the healing. Mm-hmm. But let me look at this answer to the question, because the person says, do you think this is a pattern that I'm getting some unconscious payoff or purpose from? And absolutely, yes, indeedy, ego gets payoff by either you rejecting my help or you accepting my help. Either way, you know, when I come in to save the day or change your mind or do whatever it is I think I can do for you, that is all ego being involved. And not saying that if you help people, it's all ego, but it's where you're, why you're helping people, where you're helping people from, mm-hmm. and being truly helpful. You know, that prayer, I'm here only to be truly helpful. How am I being truly helpful? I'm here to represent the Christ. I don't have to worry about what to say or do because he'll direct me. I'm content to be right here because I know he goes here with me, and I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal. It's all about me being healed, not me going out and healing others. So that little prayer is, you know, a lesson to me about, you know, how to actually be when I'm, you know, dealing with people that need my help. You know, if I'm here to be only truly helpful, then I'm going to represent the Christ, not represent Lynn, and I'm going to let the Holy Spirit be in charge, not me. It's not up to me to do whatever, because mm-hmm. I don't know.
Quick comment on what you just said. The amusing thing when you said goody two shoes, I was thinking, well, there's a symbol of duality right there. Yes, because when we're coming from that perspective, you know, we're obviously thinking there is an other, and the Christ is the principle that suggests that otherness is a gently forgivable mistake, you know, and that's the reality that we're here to share, and with our own mind, because there is no other mind, and everyone is included in that mind. So we don't have to worry about who's included, because everyone's included. But because we have chosen to believe that they're separate selves, we're responsible for what seems to be our separate self, and nothing else. And that's very freeing, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, and not being afraid of making mistakes, mm-hmm. because you yourself, the ego, is not involved in the situation. Now that's not very common that happens, but the more you practice, the more it becomes common, mm-hmm. and helpful. So you've been caught in a very common confusion, thinking that Jesus is talking about doing things for others when he speaks of helping our brother. The line in particular from the psychotherapy pamphlet that you refer to says, nothing in the world is holier than helping one who asks for help. And that's from the psychotherapy pamphlet, section 2, paragraph 5, part 2, paragraph 5. I forget how that's set up. Okay, yeah. So while we still think we are bodies, we interpret such statements at the level of the body and think, as you have, that we are being guided to come to the assistance of others who have some kind of need for specific help. There is nothing wrong with doing this, but it is not what Jesus means by this line. And if we believe we are being guided by the Holy Spirit to offer our help to others at the level of behavior, we may find ourselves very surprised at their reaction. actions as you have experienced. Despite what we believe to be our best intentions, this usually means that our ego has joined the relationship, and other egos can be very quick to react to ours, which we know, for we are seeing others as in need and ourselves as having what they need. Even if we believe the Holy Spirit is the source of what we think we have been sent to offer them. And this makes differences and separation very real. So I love the way that this is written because, you know, it's not saying because you're bad or because you're stupid or because you're mistaking what's going on. It's just, it is a mistake. But what it's doing is it's making the separation more real. It's making me see you as the other, as so real. And it also says, and I think in the very beginning of the psychotherapy pamphlet, the therapist heals by seeing that he and his and by basically not judging the patient.
Exactly. I was just going to mention that. That's my favorite line. I forget. I would paraphrase it too, just like you did. But that's it. Is, you know, when we forget to judge each other, in this case, in that particular context of, you know, a therapist patient relationship, but it's any relationship, that's when healing begins. And I think that's such an important concept that the healing that is being talked about is in the mind, and there's only two states of mind, and one is total inclusion, and the Holy Spirit is and the Jesus of the Course, which I like to abbreviate as our inner kindness teacher, is my placeholder phrase, is all about remembering that the only thing that is workable and really works to get us back to that awareness of perfect oneness is the sameness, is the seeing everyone as having the same three components in mind, which is a decision-making faculty and then the real and deluded thought system to choose between, and that deluded one takes countless forms, and that's the magic show that we get enthralled by and sit in the audience and are distracted by the things that the magician is very skillful at drawing our attention to, while what's really going on, you know, it goes unnoticed, and that's, I think, a great metaphor for how, you know, we all have gotten so invested in ego's shenanigans. And think that its goals are worthy, and look over here. You know, meanwhile, the reality that it doesn't want us to look at is in this case, in this, you know, mixing the metaphors, is going on unabated and unthreatened, while we're looking at all the firefighting and all the, you know, the evening news of the ego's mind that says, oh, you know, panic about this and be you know, angry about that and yada yada yada, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And for me, the bottom line of all of this is if I'm listening to my own mind and my own ego, I really don't know what to do. I don't even know what's really wrong. You know, when you go to help somebody, if you really don't know what the problem is, and that's why those, you know, the workbook lessons are so helpful. You know, let me know what the problem really is. You know, I don't know what this problem is. I don't really know what's going on here at all. I have no basis upon which to judge or to choose.
Exactly.
And, yeah. You know, when you go in thinking, you know, I'm the cavalry and I've got the cure, God only knows what you're going to do.
Because, yeah.
Well, God doesn't know what you're going to do. That's an odd phrase, isn't it? God only knows.
Well, God only knows truth.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But everything else that's in space, time, individuality, and guilt is not particularly true.
Exactly. And I'm a notorious meddler. That's my, you know, I've always been that way. And
are you happy?
What's that?
Heavy meddler?
A heavy meddler, yes. Oh my gosh, Mr. Fun. But yeah, and I've always been, you know, thinking I know the answer, thinking I know what's wrong, thinking I know what needs to be fixed, thinking, you know, I can see, and especially after I, you know, did the, you know, took, you know, college psychology and you get this idea you can analyze and figure out and help people out with their problems. And, the fact is, the only psychotherapist that actually is the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And the only teacher that really is the Holy Spirit. And so for me to go in with the I know mind saying, oh yeah, I see you're depressed because of this, or you need this kind of help or whatever, you know, all I'm going to do is muddy the waters. Heavy meddling and muddying the waters. That's me.
Yeah, it's our Whoville story analysis, you know, of things that says, oh, I've got this all figured out from my little speck of dust perspective of the cosmos, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Should I read the next sentence?
Yeah, why don't you go on?
Yeah. Trust not your good intentions. They are not enough. And that's from The Little Willingness, which is in Chapter 18, Section 4, which is wonderful. I have that flipped over right now, and if we had time, we could read through that, because I think I got almost the whole thing underlined, because it's just so loaded with good stuff. But anyway, I'll go on. It says, they're not good enough. Is Jesus' caution to us when we think we know what we need to do in any situation? Yeah, exactly. In those situations where we think we know, we're down, like you say, Lynn, we're down on the battlefield, and we've donned the armor, and we've picked up a sword again, and we thought, I'm going to fight this problem and the dream that I perceive. Well, forgetting that it's a projection of my mind. And so, yeah, from that perspective, we think there's problems to solve. Well, on the level of form, sure, let's do the things that seem appropriate and kind and helpful, but not get invested in thinking that is fixing the cause, because it couldn't possibly. Okay, and it says, and in the earlier, excuse me, and in the text, and earlier in the text, Jesus advises, do not attempt to, quote, help a brother in your way, for you cannot help yourself. Of course, referring to the little s self. But hear his call for the help of God, and you will recognize your own need for the Father. And that's the gold mine that A Course in Miracles unearths for us, is by looking at what's going on in the world. There's the royal road that Freud called the unconscious, and the dream world that he thought was just limited nighttime dreams. But as Ken Wapnick points out, you know, in one of the Lighthouse articles I just read recently, he says, no, it's all the whole dream, including the daytime dream that we seem to be experiencing right now. That is the perfect reflection of what's going on in our unconscious mind, given to us in a form that we can relate to. Because, you know, unconscious guilt is a phrase like, huh, what? But irritation about what's going on in the world, or annoyance or upset with what's happening on the TV, or a conversation with a neighbor or a friend or a spouse or loved one or a coworker, you know, anything that triggers the least bit of discomfort is a gorgeous, gift wrapped, beautifully, handcrafted, system for us to look at the contents of our mind, see, oh, here's my projection handed to me on a silver platter, and all I have to do is look at it with the Holy Spirit and forgive myself for making a big deal about it, and seeing it for what it is, you know, revealing to myself the nature of the intent that wasn't good enough to fix the dream, and release my investment in trying to fix it myself. And then from that perspective, we now, you know, rise above the battleground of separate interests and see that there is a way of looking at things that doesn't make the other person wrong, and therefore we're not wrong. And that's our way out. You want to read the next paragraph?
Sure. And just comment a little bit here. Again, this whole idea that I'm supposed to help you. And the fact is, I really don't know how, mm-hmm. Although I think I do, and I think I have ideas. But then when I'm not able to help you, because really I'm not, and it may be temporary, and you may say you feel better just to get rid of me, because it's been so annoying in my attempts to try to be, you know, oh, let me fluff your pillows, let me bring you tea, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing. I mean, I'm not, you know, you know, getting down to this whole idea of thinking that I know what you need, and not recognizing that it's really me. I'm the one who's really in pain. I'm the one who's really suffering, and I'm feeling guilty because I really don't know how to help you, and I can't help you, and I'm not really helping you at all. And so that will make me feel guilty. And B, because I can't help myself, and I know that, you know, even reaching out to try to help you in my weakened condition is fraudulent on my part. You know, I'm trying to do something that I'm not equipped to do, and knowing all along that, you know, it's not really going to help either one of us. And so I feel guilty because of that. Again, you know, I always go back to this because I think it's really, really helpful to me anyway, is to whenever I feel any sense of discomfort in this world, whether it's bodily discomfort, mental, emotional, is to stop and look at where is the guilt in this? Where am I feeling guilty because I can't help you, because I don't know what's wrong, because, you know, I don't have the money to pay for your therapy, because I, you know, whatever reason, you know, because I think I know the solution and I'm offering a solution that cannot help, I'm going to feel guilty for offering you a solution that I know is wrong. Then I'm going to feel bad, and I'm going to get mad. I'm going to blame you. I'm going to blame myself, and I'm going to blame God. not necessarily in that order, but, you know, I mean, it pretty much is a whole scenario of guilt and blame and shame, because I should be able to help you. Jesus is telling me that I can, and he's telling me the Holy Spirit's here to help me, and yet, you know, you don't seem to be getting better. I must be inadequate. I don't have what Jesus told me I could do. You know, there's all these expectations lead up to nothing but disappointment. Mm-hmm. And that disappointment, we turn on ourselves and we attack ourselves because of it. And so, you know, even though this person seems to be blaming everybody else for their not having, accepting their help, or appreciating their help, really they're blaming themselves, and they're attacking their own selves. And so, this do not attempt to help a brother in your way, for you cannot help yourself, but hear this call for the help of God, and you will recognize your own need for the Father from chapter 12. That's it. It's when I recognize my own need for the Father. That is when I get right down to the root of the problem. You know, let me recognize the problem, and let me recognize that it can be solved. Those two lessons really are the crux of all this work that we're doing here. Because if I don't know what the problem really is, and I come in here to try to solve it, then I'm going to be solving everything else around it, and I'm never going to get to the reality of it. But when I recognize that the actual problem is this thought that I'm separated from my Father, and I return to that actual problem and resolve that, then, you know, I can, then results happen in miraculous ways. This is the basis for the miracle, is turning everything over to the one who really knows, and getting out of my investment in the outcome or the method or, you know, the means or anything else. It's the investment that's the problem.
Exactly.
In me being able to be the problem solver.
Yeah. And as the beginning of chapter 21 says, you know, there's a phrase in there that I really like before the song, the Forgotten Song, that says, you know, our cues for inference are wrong. You know, we basically, you know, everything, if we base the results, like you were talking about a moment ago, Lynn, of, you know, if the basis for our peace of mind is whether or not someone else accepts our help, well, we've already made two, you know, misconceptions right there, is that there's someone else and that they need help. That they need our help, right? Because the only person that really needs help, and that's why this is, rightly classified as a self-study course, is because we really just need to study the self that we've chosen, which identity, and realize that the self that we've invested in hasn't got us anywhere, and that's the self-study is just to examine, just look at our intentions on the belief system of separation, or, you know, our mind on that drug, and realize that it's gotten us nowhere. It just hasn't worked. It's a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, as Ken says, and it's just silly. We don't have to go there anymore. So do you want to read the next one?
Yeah, I'll go ahead to the next paragraph. Okay, so perhaps the most helpful thing to keep in mind as you are putting A Course in Miracles into practice is that it is never speaking about behavior. Again, you can have that tattooed on your hand. This is never speaking about behavior, never speaking about behavior, never speaking about, and yet we still will react to behavior and attempt to fix behavior, and it's never about behavior. It is always, okay, I'm just going to go on. What we do as bodies in relationship to other bodies is not where Jesus is asking us to focus our attention and efforts. For Jesus is not addressing us as the bodies that we think we are. He is speaking to us as minds. Mind. Over time, as you begin to recognize this deeper level at which the Course is written, you may be astonished at how many of the lines and passages that you thought you understood now take on a whole new meaning. Yes, I am. And how many of the passages that you simply overlooked because you didn't understand what they were saying now become very meaningful. And yes, for me, this has been the case. There's been whole paragraphs and whole sections that I just didn't read. I just read and said, I don't get this, and moved on.
Yeah.
And
excuse me. Oh, I was going to say, or read but didn't let the words even register, you know, that kind of like the robotic resistance that we have to the truth that can undo it. And that's okay, you know, that's another forgivable thing, is when there's things that we're not ready for, to not fight ourselves and just be okay with that and say, okay, when I'm ready to understand this, I will, because, you know, that's our destiny, to be freed of the all of ego's rickety ladders and you know, choose the solid one in the middle that does work instead of all the crazy ones that are on the periphery that are destined to failure.
Exactly. And I think for me, there's been three phases of A Course in Miracles. The first phase, when I first started reading, it was, oh, this is beautiful. Look at how beautiful. This is all about forgiveness. This is beautiful. And then came the dawn. And there was the phase of, oh my God, he's telling me this is how my ego works. This is how the world works. This is why everything's so screwed up. He's not telling me everything is beautiful. He's telling me, look at how I've made a world that is just so, so crazy and so painful, and you know, all this stuff that I was thinking was beautiful words before are now just ripping me apart, because I'm seeing that he really means it. This is not just beautiful words. These are words of instruction to me to look at myself. And when I look at myself, I am the home of evil, darkness, and sin. So, you know, this is hard. And so I went through that phase. And that was tough. That was years. Still going through that in a lot of ways too. But the years of just going through, just again, ripping myself apart because of, you know, seeing the foibles of my own, ego self. And then after a while, began the forgiveness and the actual, is settling in of all these things. And I came to the point where now when I look at the course, I say, look at how beautiful this is. This is so wonderful. Read these words. This will free you from all your suffering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm back to the, it's beautiful and wonderful and, you know, such lovely things, but not because I'm looking at it from the bliss ninny point of view, but because I'm looking at it from the point of view of one who has been transformed by this work. And I see the true beauty of it. I see the true healing of it. And I'm just, it, you know, almost tearfully, eternally grateful for the way that this has been done. It's just so perfect, beautiful and perfect. Let's see. Did I even finish this paragraph? No, I didn't. I just hardly started it. So, Jesus is not addressing the body. He's speaking to us, at the mind. And over time, as you begin to recognize this deeper level at which the course was written, you may be astonished at how many of the lines and passages that you thought you understood now take on a whole new meaning, and how many of the passages that you simply overlooked because you didn't understand what they were saying now become very meaningful. Yet this is the experience of most students who commit themselves to an open-minded study of the course. Open-minded study. Acknowledging that there is much yet that they are not ready to understand, but will as their own practice of forgiveness deepens through first recognizing and then releasing their own guilt and fear. And that is for me the absolute, you know, this has been my experience, that being able to practice forgiveness, look at my own guilty thoughts, look at the reality of this mind and this body and this world that I've made, and recognizing that, I didn't do anything permanently harmful and damaging. I only made a mistake in my perception, and I can let it go. And that actually is what brings about the healing. And, I'm going to just go ahead and read the next paragraph.
Sure.
Down the road this far. Consider, for example, the lines that come a few paragraphs later in the same section as the above line on helping. And welcome, Carrie and Nico. And I'll give you put the link in the room again for where we're reading from. So
it's FAQ 1135 in facmoutreach.org if you want to go there.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, thank you, Bruce. All right. So, these put the above sentence in a completely different light, as they negate the idea that there is any need for helping or healing, as Jesus refers to it in this context. Clarify what the true nature of help is, forgiveness of oneself for all the false accusations, and identify who is truly being helped. Only ourselves. We are deceived already if we think there is a need of healing. And the truth will come to us only through one who seems to share our dream of sickness. Let us help him forgive himself for all the trespasses with which he would condemn himself without a cause. His healing is our own. And that, again, is from the psychotherapy pamphlet. And so what it's saying is, you know, Jesus says, you know, yes, you know, it's really, you know, you need to help each other with these things, but know what it is that you're helping, and you know what you're helping is your own self, first
right.
off, and then helping our brother forgive himself, which when you come in with an idea that, you know, you're sick and I'm here to heal you. That is actually a condemnation. That's an accusation that is saying to the person, you're not whole. You're not what God created or how God created you. You've somehow, ruined perfection. And so now I'm here to make it all better.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if we see someone as broken, then we're using a broken thought system in our mind to project something that's less than perfectly innocent. And that's exactly not what the Course is suggesting that we do. It's basically seeing that if we look at our own projections, bring them back in, see that they're insubstantial and inconsequential, then that gives us the solid footing on which to do true forgiveness, which is forgiving ourselves for making up a dream in which there could possibly be anything that is less than perfect oneness and perfect innocence. And the way we're in a practical level, a pragmatic, realm, how we do that, I think, on a day-to-day basis, and we can use a lot of different words for this, but is letting everyone else off the hook, not necessarily in the level of form. You don't stop holding your kids, responsible for their chores, or your coworkers, and if you're in a management position, your employees, you want to make sure that people do what they're expected to do. On the level of form, it's just kind of normal behavior, but on the level of the mind, which is the only place the Course is pitched, is to recognize that if we let everyone be off let everyone off the hook and see the perfect innocence in everyone in every situation, which is a big, a tall order, but it's doable with practice. We begin to see that the perfection in each situation comes to us as this wonderful gift where we get to heal our own mind. And that is the incredible gratitude we owe everyone for giving us the opportunity to see the contents of our own mind so that we can forgive ourselves. And it has really nothing to do with otherness, literally and figuratively. So
exactly, and that then can be looked out in the world now when you're thinking about how messed up the election is, or how bad it is that the drinking water in Flint, Michigan is bad, or how terrible it is that the Brownie Scouts are not able to sell cookies at, someplace, or, any time we look at
anything. Oh, now that's horrible.
Yeah. Look outside.
the first two, I'm not so sure about, but that third one, man, that's awful.
Yeah, gotta sell the cookies. But when we're looking at the external world and seeing what is wrong out there, it's like those dirty windows. When you clean the window, you actually see that nothing is wrong and everything is just, perfect as it always was. And the only thing that has caused any sort of sin has been my own perception of it. And so this is why, when you clean the filter, you clean the window, you purify yourself internally, purify your mind, which is, and one of the miracle principles says that purification is necessary before you can do this. What does purification mean? Does that mean that I, go and confess my sins and mea culpa and, take, three, whip to the back or whatever? No. Purification is looking at my thoughts and recognizing that, and letting them go bit by bit by bit, one by one by one. And what purifies us is looking at these situations we project down into the world and see that projection makes perception. I'm actually seeing the content of my mind spread out around me in very graphic detail. And all I have to do is look at any one of those graphic details and recognize my own responsibility for that. Not because I'm responsible for not letting Brownie Scouts sell cookies, but because I have a judgment about the whole situation, and that judgment is what is making that real to me, giving me emotions and urge to run out and fix things. That all comes from this confusion about the cause and effect. And and the authority problem, and it's taking me out of the driver's seat, excuse me, and instead of having Jesus or the Holy Spirit be my co-pilot, which is ridiculous because they're the ones that know the way, you know, get out of the driver's seat, let them be the pilot, and then, you know, I can truly be helpful. Again, it's all comes back down to if I really want to be helpful, then, you know, I gotta, like on the airplane, put the mask on yourself first before you try to help other passengers. Because if right. you don't, if you can't make it, you can't help them.
Right.
And
right.
so this is what it's all about. Turn to your own self, clear yourself up, and, you know, then you are in a position to really be truly helpful because you're not judging their situation anymore. You're not looking at their situation and thinking that there is any resolution to it other than me healing my mind. That's the only resolution to any of it.
Beautifully and eloquently stated, Lynn. You said a lot there, and it all rang true for me. So, yeah, I think I just derailed my own train of thought. But anyway, there's I'll think of it. But anyway, shall I just read the last three paragraphs?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. In other words, we're always the ones in need of help, so long as we believe we are these individual selves in the world, and our brother is simply the mirror that allows us to look within. And the only help we can offer a brother is to remember the choice that we always have about whom we are going to turn to for help in any situation, the ego or the Holy Spirit. As Jesus observes earlier in the text, the only meaningful contribution the healer, helper, can make is to present an example of one whose direction has been changed for him, and the four is in italics there, meaning emphasized, and who no longer believes in nightmares of any kind. The light in his mind will therefore answer the questioner, who must decide with God that there is light because he sees it. So in other words, we allow ourselves to be changed, and I think that kind of reflects beautifully what you were just saying, is that, you know, that was what I was going to say. I was the passenger, because you cover so much there, I kind of was listening to the subsequent things you were saying. Well, that's okay. No, everything you said rang very true for me and very helpful. The passenger, you know, pilot or passenger driver metaphor, I hadn't really thought about that until you just said that just now, Lena, that I've realized as you were saying that could be another example where we could be alert to level confusion, because on the level of form, on the level of behavior, the Course isn't asking us to say, okay, Jesus, tell me, you know, what flavor of ice cream, or, you know, what should I do, you know, in terms of the specifics, necessarily. You know, we may get guidance in that regard, but generally it's really more about, can I choose to see my brother innocent? Would I accuse myself of this? Like yesterday's workbook lesson says, you know, can I see everyone that I meet as being perfect and free from guilt and worthy of all encompassing love and loving kindness? That's really, I think, the putting the Holy Spirit in the driver's seat on the level of the mind. And on the level of behavior, it would be silly to say, okay, I'm just going to sit here in the passenger seat and wait for Jesus to run my life on the level of form, because that's not what the Course is talking about. It's not about the level of form. Although, you know, we certainly can be informed by that decision in the mind to make choices that are more helpful. But I think it's a trap that we can get into of thinking that Jesus is going to fix the dream, basically, for us. That we don't have to... We're suddenly absolved of making any decisions in the world. No, of course not. We still have, you know, thousands of little decisions every day on the level of form. But if we do it on a different level, by chewing gum and walking, by chewing Jesus's gum, so to speak, on the level of the mind, you know, and that's, it's a very, very healing gum. It's just to make this metaphor more useful. There you go. Well, a spirit gum has that anyway.
And, I love it.
And, yeah, that's the chewing there, or the what's the word, marinating or masticating or just kind of mulling over, how's that, for the idea that all, we're all spirit, that is going to help us have a broader range of choices on the level of form to then choose one that includes everyone's best interest as best we can. And we don't have to be concerned about how that works. We just have to be willing to say, if I'm willing to mull over and continue to return my mind gently but firmly to the thought system of inclusion and kindness and true forgiveness, then I'm more likely to make better choices on the walking, you know, shifting from the chewing gum to the walking, you know, on the dream car, you know, the physical vehicles, including our own bodies that we drive around in. We do have to make decisions that, but we don't have to make them on our own in the sense that we don't have to do that without the feeling of the quality of peace that comes from choosing that inner kindness teacher at any given moment. So let me just finish off these last this last little bit of FAQ 1135. Unless you have other comments, Len.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. In other words, we're always the ones in need of help. So long as we believe we are these individual selves in the world, and our brother is simply the mirror that allows us to look within. And the only help we can offer a brother is to remember the choice that we always have about whom we are going to turn to help for. Turn to for help in any situation, the ego or the Holy Spirit. There it is. It's that binary switch, huh? Only two positions. And we're always in one or the other at any given moment. As Jesus observes earlier in the text, the only meaningful contribution the healer helper can make is to present an example of the one whose direction has been changed for him and who no longer believes in nightmares of any kind. The light in his mind will therefore answer the questioner, who must decide with God that there is light because he sees it. That's from chapter 9, section 5, paragraph 7. The issue of credentials then becomes irrelevant, for the help we are being invited to offer our brother has nothing to do with any specific form. There we go again. So the help that the Course is talking about is only at the level of the mind, where we're already joined. We're already one being, one awareness. Everyone is included in that capital S self. In fact, our brother may not even be consciously aware of the help that is being offered through us. And that, I think, ties into something else you were saying, Lynn, that really jogged my memory, is on the level of form, if we think we're offering help to someone else, in quotes, and they either respond favorably or not, then thinking that the outcome on the level of form, the dream outcome, if you will, is important, is just another way of egos entrapping us into the idea that form is important again. So.
And making us feel guilty.
Yeah, that's, sure.
It comes right down to you. Then you are guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't fixed the dream. There must be something wrong with me. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So let's see. I'll start that one over again. In fact, our brother may not even be consciously aware of the help that is being offered us, for we may not say or do anything at all, but we will be remembering the truth about both ourselves and our brother, which is really the same self, that our guilt is not real. And that is the only help that any of us ever needs. Bingo.
Bingo. That's it. And it's a dream that's built on guilt. It's a world that's built on guilt. And, you know, until you get to the point where you see where the guilt is and how it is that you're doing it to yourself, you'll never get this. And you know, there's many people, and, you know, I don't know if that's what they call bliss ninnies or not, that go around saying, well, you know, I don't see my guilt. I don't understand guilt. I don't know what Jesus is talking about guilt. You know, I don't feel guilty. How many times have I heard people say that? I don't feel guilty. Me, I never said that. I always feel guilty. I've always felt guilty my whole life for not making the world a better place, by not giving, you know, everything to everybody, for, you know, I'm just a guilt machine, I guess. So,
I think that that's a good, another good point, Lynn. I think another way to look at that that I find helpful is to recognize it's the entire thought system, and guilt is a word that has certain connotations for certain people. But if you lump together, which of course, if there's only two thought systems, then we must, in truth, associate guilt with fear, with boredom, with judgment, with jealousy, with irritation, with annoyance. Anything that is less than perfect peace is guilt. It basically is, because it's all the same thought system, and the words and the specific emotions may differ, but it's all the idea that something went terribly wrong, and that somehow, because I have this awareness and I'm experiencing it, I must be complicit in that whatever went wrong. And the unchallenged assumption, unless we look at it, is that somehow we messed up perfect oneness. We threw God under the bus. We shattered the unshatterable perfection of perfect innocence and perfect kindness and perfect peace. And we think we pulled it off. And all we have to do is trust our senses to deliver us, the interpretation at the level that the ego works at, which is literally taking the dream as reality. And there's more than ample evidence in this incredibly elaborate hologram to support that, silly thesis. I mean, it's all it is. It's just a concept that's been put forth by the ego, that we took this tiny man idea, made a whole universe to support it, to promote it and to propagandize it and to continue to reinforce, unless we look at it, unless we challenge it and stop and say, wait a minute, there must be a better way, you know. And we have to go from the phase that Helen talked about and when they first were getting the material, Helen and Bill says, you know, I'm not sure if I like this course, you know, and something to that effect, you know. And then at some point she says, later on she says, I know it's true, I just don't believe it, you know. And I think that's, you know, as we, you know, go through the process of mulling over these ideas, we realize that, you know, any irritation or any need to try to change someone else that this particular FAQ addresses is a fair game and a good classroom exercise in our mind for looking at wanting to be our own dream repair technician and thinking that that's what's going to make us happy. But, so anyway.
But it's not. So.
No, nope.
Again, another fun
you
and I enjoy so much teaching with you.
Oh, me too.
I think we work together really well, and I do appreciate that. So,
likewise.
For sure, look for other opportunities to do that. You had mentioned that one time, and I think it's a great idea. So, anyway.
Can I make a quick announcement?
Absolutely, please do.
I was just going to say that for people who are interested in participating in the Weekend of Freedom Retreat, which is happening in Estes Park, Colorado, and thanks to you, Lynn, for alerting me to this about quite a few months ago now, it's happening June 16th through the 19th, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the third weekend of June? Anyway, June 16th through the 19th. In Estes Park, Colorado. I'll be there. Gary Renard, Cindy Laura Renard, David Hoffmeister, Craig Villarubia, Maria Felipe, Lori Coburn. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have, and I just talked to Cheryl yesterday, and she says there's about 100 people, roughly, that have signed up. And there are still rooms left for people. That's the main reason for bringing this up. There's 2 days left. I think the 16th, maybe just this weekend, that there's 2 days left to get a room at the Estes Park YMCA before they release the block of rooms that was being held for the conference. So if you have intentions of going, or anyone who does, and want to stay there at the Y, which apparently the facilities are wonderful, as you've pointed out, Lynn, then this would be the time to do it, because on the 16th or 17th, I'm not sure exactly which, one of those 2 days, that block of rooms will be released to the general public, and then you might have to stay elsewhere because they book up really fast. So you can go to weekendoffreedomretreat.org or .com, either one works, and I look forward to seeing you there if you happen to be going or plan to go. So
I'm going to be there, and I know Regina Dawn Akers is going to be there.
Right.
So we have a little contingent coming up from Pueblo, and right. I'm really excited about it. And also, if you don't get a room at the Y, it sounds like a joke, but really, if you don't get a room there, you can definitely, there's hotels, motels a lot in the Estes Park area.
Yes.
And also, there's camping. So you can actually, there's not far away from the venue where you can actually camp. So if you have your own camper or you know whatever you want to do, you can do that as well. So there's lots of other options for and there's different prices for if you're staying elsewhere and you just come for the meetings and the meals. So yeah, do look into it. I did post it on the board, the link. So And how many people did you say have signed up about? Do you see?
I think Cheryl said there's about 100 or close to 100 now. So,
wow, that's
It's gonna be
that's
fun.
Amazing.
This is gonna be fun. It is, yeah.
I'm really excited.
Well, I think it's gonna be a really wonderful 4 days. And another quick announcement. I had a really wonderful conversation. A couple of them actually. One, I was interviewed by Jackie Laura Jones, Cindy Laura Renard's sister, on her 24th hour program. And then I just posted a conversation and we kind of turned the tables and I interviewed her, although I did a fair amount of talking, I have to admit, on ACIM blog. So if you go to acimblog.com and click on the sitemap and scroll backwards from the bottom, you can see that at the end of the list there, along with other recent interviews and conversations, including the ones that you and I've done, Lynn. And so again, thank you for that and all that you do, and thanks to everyone listening, and have a great week.
All right. I love you, Bruce, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Likewise. Looking forward to it.
All right. Bye-bye.
The embrace, the source of all beginnings, the kernel, and the wholeness of life.